Hi, this is Andrew.
And this is Amy, and in this episode, AADL talks to veteran Ann Arbor News reporter Bill Tremmel about John Norman Collins and the co-ed murders. Tremmel was the police reporter throughout the murders and the trial of John Norman Collins.
The cops would call me. They had my name on their list. They have a fatal or something. They'd call me. 2 o'clock in the morning, short of pants on over pajamas and go. Of course, when the John Norman Collins thing was going, I was not always, but a lot of times first on the scene. And one victim was up there north side near Concordia College. And I got a call from Krasny, God rest him, police chief, nice guy. He called me at 11 o'clock in the morning. He says, we found another body. So I went to the desk, and Bob Rollmaker, he's gone too. I said, Bob, Krasny says they got another body. He looked up at the clock and he says, they can't, it's 11 o'clock. A deadline is 10:30, you know. I says, I felt like saying, should I have him hold her? I mean, he said, well, you better go out there with Stubbs. Well, going out with Stubbs is an adventure, and best clicker I ever saw. I mean, personality, good looking guy, and he'd take over the interviews, you know, I'd just sit there, but he was good. So he and I went out there, and as we started out there, we saw the plain police car with Krasny in it and the deputy chief and a couple other big wheels there. And we followed them all the way out. And so when we got there, Stubbs says, look at that. The cops, very meticulous, like German Nazis, they put little flags along a path leading to the body. And Stubbs says, look what they did. I says, let's go up there. They don't know if Krasny has given us permission or Harvey or anybody. So we snuck up there, Harvey, Stubbs, and I, and he took multiple pictures. And then he said, let's get the hell out of here. So we did. And Rollmaker says, well, you know, it's an hour past deadline. We're holding the press. I love that term. I used to hear it on movies, and hold a press. Well, we never held a press, but he said, well, we'll delay it. So go ahead and write it in takes. Well, a take in those days was one graph, one paragraph. And I would do a paragraph, and he'd come over, just like the movies, he'd rip it out of the typewriter, and he'd edit it and send it out to the composing room. Well, that's pretty neat trick, except you got to remember what you just wrote. You know, it shouldn't fall apart. So I'm writing like mad, trying to get to the thing. And, of course, being on a scene, if you're not a total idiot, you can kind of absorb what's going on without taking notes. So I had a very good story going there, and all of a sudden the phone rang. It was Stubbs. At that time, the photography department was in a cellar. I don't mean the basement, in a cellar. And he says, Tremmel, says, the advance wasn't working on the camera. I got no pictures. I says, Stubbs, you're killing me. And I went back to writing, and I told Rollmaker, he says, well, you guys got to go back out there. Well, that's very nice, but you see, the vultures from Detroit are circling around. And as soon as we got out there, they're there. So Stubbs says, I'll take a long shot. And he told you, you know, anybody take a long shot. That's 2 miles away. But no pictures of the actual scene except, you know, what he took. So anyways, that was one of the misadventures that happens all the time. But the Collins thing was good. It was, you know, it never got off page one there for, I don't know, 10 days or something. And then, you know, sinners and idiots are guided by God, because after he was arrested in September, October, and the trial wasn't until June. You know, they kept him in jail and interrogating and all that. So comes June, and somehow the court reporter, the circuit court reporter who covers all the good stuff, is gone. I mean, he's quit or been shot or something. Nobody knows. But anyways, the desk says, you want to cover the Collins trial? And, of course, naturally, the thing is the Pope Catholic? Of course I want to cover it. So that was the best court experience I ever had. It was a six-week trial. And what we did was, it's like the movies, you go to the trial until the break at 10:30, and then run to a phone, because we had no cell phones. They had to run across to the hotel and get some nickels and I told Romaker, I said, you got to pay me. I'm using my own money here. And then call it in from the top of your head, you know, what happened in the first hour and a half. Then you go back, cover it till noon, go eat, come back, and then you go till 5 o'clock. And well, that was easy because then you could go home and eat and come back at 8 o'clock at night and work till 2. But you got all that time where you're calling it in. You got to get, you know, giddy up, get it done. And so it was good because we had, had some juries that were, well, drawing the jury was a thing. They had 220 prospective jurors, and they had all kinds of, there's funny people live around here, you know. They had this one guy, he owned a bar in Chelsea, and of course they asked the usual questions. Now, at this moment, do you think John Norman Collins here is, do you think he's innocent? And the guy from Chelsea says, no, I think they should hang him right now. Boom, he's gone, you know. Well, they were down to 10 prospective jurors. They kicked off that many. And finally, they set a jury trial. And, of course, I'm skipping the major part, is that Collins had Joe Louisel, old mob attorney, grandfather type, glasses, graying hair, and then Neil Fink, who was a young Mustang. This guy, I wouldn't ask him the weather because he'd kill you. So Joe Louisel would visit with him. He said, we're just going to visit to the witnesses. And he'd drone on and get their confidence, and once in a while he'd get a little kick in there. And then he'd say, now my colleague here, Mr. Fink, is going to question you. Oh, I mean, you want to drop out the window if you're... So Fink goes in there and he rips and tears, and I'm telling you, if I was charged with murder, that's the guy I'd get, because he'd get you off or get your nervous breakdown. He was good. I mean, he cut him up. And of course, late Bill Delhay was the prosecutor, and Booker Williams was his assistant. And Delhay was, you know, an old shoe type. I mean, guy's an old farmer, what he is. But he'd go very methodically, and Booker Williams had the scientific part of it. They had a good team going. But anyways, the jury went out. The jury was sequestered for the locked up in a hotel. And they used to march up Huron Street, and we used to look out the window and see them going to the hotel. And they were locked up, and they were taken home to get clothes and having a deputy there make sure they don't talk. And, of course, they couldn't see any newspapers or anything. So anyways, they were out, I think, 6.5 days. I believe that was 6.5 days. And, of course, that's hell on wheels, 6.5 days. What are you going to write about? The jury's out. Well, I was out yesterday, too, you know. So we waited and waited, and finally they said, verdict's coming in. So fortunately, the Ann Arbor News building, which is now owned by a bank or something, you know, that's a shame. They should make a monument there or something. Anyways, it's only a block down, so we'd run down there and get the verdict, and guilty as charged, and they send him back to jail, ready to go to Jackson, and then Delhay and Fink and Booker Williams went to dinner. They had a peaceful lunch, I guess, or something. Anyways, it was good, and they found him guilty. So naturally, when John goes to Jackson, he's a celebrity, and they don't like celebrities there. The cons don't like celebrities. So they had to lock him up, I don't know, separately for a while, and some brainstorm on our desk said, I don't know, a couple of years later, how about getting an interview with John Norman Collins? I said, why don't pigs fly? Of course you're going to get an interview, because some furniture dealer in Dearborn was going to film a thing about Collins, and Collins says, I'm going to sue. You can't do that. And where he got the word they were going to sue, they were going to make the film, is a guard. His daughter was doing something with newspaper work and told him. So the guy pulled off and said, "Well, I'm not going to make the film." So again, we had some super brains on the desk. They did not know how to open the door, and they said, "Well, now you can get an interview with Collins." I says, "Yeah, I could be a millionaire tomorrow too, but I ain't going to get it." They all, "Go ahead and try." So I called this gal, I forget her name, nice lady. She was on the Department of Corrections. She was the PR. So I called her and I says, well, Connie, or whatever her name was, I says, I hate to ask you, but my brains are down here asking. She says, I'll call you back. So about an hour later, she calls back. She says, John Norman Collins says he'll talk to Deanna Renews and Tremel. Me? Who am I? I'm a little two-bit reporter. And so that was one of the first questions. Stubbs and I went up there. One of the first questions I asked him, I said, why us? He's, well, he says, my lawyers told me that you did a fair job. I didn't do any more fair than the Free Press or anybody else, but he thought so, and that was good enough for me. So we went through a bunch of questions, and of course John says, I never knew the girl. He says, I never dated her, I never went out with her. And of course, that's kind of thin when you got two eyeball witnesses looking out of the wig shop and seeing him on a motorcycle waiting for her, waiting for Karen Sue Beineman. And so we went on quite a bit, and then Stubbs is taking pictures, and then Stubbs conducts his own interview, and I shut up because, you know, Stubbs is better than I am, you know. So he asked a bunch of questions, and so we got through there. It took about an hour and a half, and we came out to the deputy warden's office. I hate those titles. Those titles scare me. Deputy warden says, John, and he took the camera out of Stubbs' hands, the deputy warden. He says, John, he says, if you don't want this published or whatever, I can open this camera and take the film out. I thought Stubbs was going to drop dead. I mean, here he is. I mean, Stubbs is not just a picture taker. Anybody can take I used to take pictures, but he was an artist with a camera. He got them in every angle. And boy, we start talking. And I told him, I says, John, this is not going on a tomato soup can. It's not going on advertising. It's to tell your story, and it will strengthen the story by you having a picture. He says, well, I don't know. And Deputy Warden says, John, you don't have to sign this. You don't have to sign it. I told myself, why did this guy get out of here and leave me alone? And so John finally signed it, and we got out, and Stubbs says, let's get out as fast as we can because they're going to change their minds. And this, I don't know if you've ever been to Jackson Prison, but it's a scary place. I mean, they got walls, and they got doors, and they got guys with guns, and so Stubbs and I got in the car and started back, and it was snowing, so it had to be the winter time. And looked back, and there you look back at Jackson Prison, and there's the snow coming down, and these guard towers, and talk about your Alfred Hitchcock setting, wow. And anyways, we got back, and I wrote, they ran it on two consecutive days, and one of them was a column that I wrote about me and Stubbs. Naturally, I give Stubbs all the credit, but I says, as we were leaving the premises, Stubbs shivered, and I understood that. I mean, it's a scary joint. Anyway, so we went back there and wrote the story, and we were the first. I hate to brag. I'm going to brag. We were the first media to interview John Norman Collins. The Free Press, the Detroit News, Time Magazine went up there, three or four, trying to get him to talk. And he said, I'm not talking to you guys. And he talked to us. And, of course, after that, the floodgates were open. Every Jerkwater Weekly around went to see him, and he relished it. But, of course, John was what the prison guys call an escape risk because he's always doing something. His mother, she died of cancer when he was in there, but she used to bring him green money. Well, in the joint, you can't have green money. You got to have a script. And so he'd hide the green money, and they'd find it, and he'd get confined. And then he, did some other things, and he was notorious. So the other cons knew it. And the trouble with that was that John had a very good personality. He has a good personality. And he would con the guards. Imagine conning a prison guard. He would. And the deputy wardens and all those would get nervous because old John was a charmer. So next stop, Marquette. Marquette's a tougher joint. And then John had a screwdriver in his sewing machine, which is contraband. And he and another guy were starting to tunnel out. Why would you tunnel out of Marquette? It's just woods. There's bears up there, you know? And he's tunneling, and they find the tunnel, and he gets in confinement again. So then he goes to Ionia. I don't know how many prisons there are in Michigan. I suppose there are a dozen. He was in every one because they'd shift him. They'd transfer him. And at one point, he had dual citizenship in Canada because his father was Canadian, mother was American. And under a treaty at that time, if the United States had a prisoner from Canada and they had a prisoner from the United States, they could swap. The only thing is murder in Canada, if you swap to like Collins, they'll lop off 5 years or more, I don't know, quite a bit. So old John, he figured it out. And he had his a lawyer or somebody write a letter to the Minister of Justice in Ottawa and said, hey, I'm a Canadian citizen. I want to go serve my time in Canada. It's my homeland. He was a better writer than I was. I mean, he really did. So they sent the thing up, and the Minister of Justice said, you don't know Collins from Schmollins. So he signs the thing. So they sent it to the governor. I don't forget who the governor was, Milliken, I think. And he was ready to sign it, and we heard about it. And I called Delhay. He says, what? He says, yeah. He says, he's going to Canada. You lost your fish. He says, we'll see about that. So he calls the relatives of a couple of the victims, and they petitioned right away on a big hearing or something, and they canceled it. So John almost got out, but not quite. And that was a pretty good story there, because it was nobody knew that this petition was up for him to get out. So,
did you find yourself uncomfortable around John? How were you able to deal with what you had to write and how you personally felt about this man and the situation?
Well, John, he makes you comfortable. I mean, he talks, he laughs and gestures, and I felt like I knew him. And that's how he did it. That's how he charmed people. No, I wasn't uncomfortable with him, and neither was Stubbs. Stubbs had a few little jokes in there and about his girlfriends and all that. And it was, if he sat down at this table, you know, you'd think he was great. I mean, he's, of course, now he's pretty faded. He's been through so many prisons and so many things, but he's a very nice guy.
Did you cover each of the murders as they came up? Were you at the scenes of each of them?
Yeah.
Is that pretty unusual to get to cover a story that's that big and cover it from the beginning to the very, very end?
Actually, it's unheard of. And if I didn't have friendship with the cops, it never happened.
To learn more about John Norman Collins and the co-ed murders, go to oldnews.aadl.org/features. This has been a production of the Ann Arbor District Library.